Hey guys, what's up? It's Dangerous ASMR, and welcome back to another Wednesday upload. Today is the not long awaited Drunken Dangerous 2 Christmas edition. So, Merry Christmas if you're in a country in which it is currently Christmas, or I hope you had a Merry Christmas. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, then I hope you're having a really fantastic fucking Wednesday in December. So, today I'm going to be reading some Christmassy fairy tales, because they're like the most fun thing ever to make fun of. And I am currently not sober, if you're at all able to tell in my voice, probably not sober, but I'm going to do my best at doing a very jolly, festive, like amazing narration of these fantastic Christmas tales so we can all listen on our Christmas or our not Christmas and come together and feel the spirit of a holiday that we may or may not celebrate or have already celebrated. So, with that in mind, or perhaps not because it's a little depressing, we're going to read our first story. And it's called Saint Nicholas and the Children. Oh, it's a Canadian fairy tale. Exciting. Two little children lived with their old grandmother in a remote place in the Canadian forest, of course. I feel like this is Canadian propaganda already. I don't know, Canada. What are you trying to push on us? Healthcare? Fucking get that out of here, shit. They were twin children, a boy and a girl, Pierre and Estelle, by name. Oh yeah, those fucking French Canadians. God, I think they're so superior. Call it poutine. They were twin children, a boy and a girl, Pierre and Estelle by name, and except for their dress, it was not easy to tell them apart. I don't want to say anything about anatomy, but I feel like the clothes aren't really, like, the main way you can tell them apart. Like, now this is, you know, I'm talking about a doctor, not like a fucking pervert, so don't go with that. It's Christmas, what the hell? It's probably Christmas, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, there's obvious anatomical differences, but I'm assuming they're talking about strangers who should not be touching people in their no-no parts, because that's extremely inappropriate. That was way too much time spent referring obliquely to children's parts. Oh God, this is already going so badly. I can be family-oriented for one day. I can pull it through. I can do this. Their father and mother had died in the springtime, and in the summer they had left their old home because of its many sad memories and had gone to live with their old grandmother in a new home elsewhere. In this new home in the forest where they now lived, they were very poor, but they were not unhappy. Times were hard, and there was very little food to be had, no matter how well their old grandmother worked. Okay, clearly she has not heard about being a witch. That's a pretty, I mean, there's lots of stupid ass fat kids that you can eat. And like crab shell. I guess you eat the leg and then like the kid gets the shell. They really like, I mean, I'm assuming somebody's eating the crab and the old lady's not just like ordering crab like shells. She's like, why do people keep selling these so cheap? This is the best part of the crab. It's the fucking shell. It's so hard and crunchy. I'm already disappointed in myself for even having talked about that. Okay. Their father and mother had died in the springtime. And in the summer, they had left their old home because of its many sad memories. Boy, I've already read this shit. What the hell is wrong with me? Merry Christmas, everyone. Your gift this year. Completely not sober dangerous. How fantastic. Fuck. Times were hard, and there was very little food to be had, no matter how well their old grandmother worked. But they caught fish in the streams and gathered berries and fruit and bird eggs on the wooded hills, and somehow throughout the summer they kept themselves from want. But when late autumn came and the streams were frozen over and the berries were all gone and there were no eggs, for the birds had all flown south, they were often hungry because they had so little to eat. Their grandmother worked so hard to provide for herself and the children that and the children that at last she fell very ill. For several days she could not leave her bed, and she said,
I want meat broth to make me well, and I must have good meat to make it.
It's a horrible voice.
If I do not get meat, I can have no broth. And if I do not get broth, I shall not get well. And if I do not get well, I shall die. And if I die, you two children will surely starve and die too. So meat and meat alone can save us all from starvation and death.
You know, it sounds like to me, this bitch is like manipulating this fucking kid. She's making them fear for their own lives. She must be pretty shitty if she doesn't even trust that her grandkids would want to save her life. She's got to make them think they have to fear for themselves too, you know? That's pretty manipulative, Grandma. God damn. This is why nobody wants to get you meat. I wouldn't get you meat. Fuck you, Grandma. Not literally. That's not my next role play. Okay. All right, so old lady manipulation. So the two children, to keep themselves and their grandmother alive, set out one morning in search of meat to make the broth. They lived far from other people, and they did not know where to go, but they followed the forest path. The snow lay deep on the ground and sparkled brightly in the sunlight. The children had never before been away from home alone, and every sight was of great interest to them, like a regular, like, homeschooled kid. No offense to people that have... Here and there, a rabbit hopped over the snow, or a snowbird hovered and twittered overhead, all looking for food like the children. And there were holly berries growing in many places, and there was mistletoe hanging from the trees. You know, I just realized... Like, I guess I forgot and then re-remembered. This is a fucking Christmas story. Oh, I totally forgot this was a Christmas story for a second. That mistletoe just like brought me right back. And Pierre, when he saw the holly berries and the mistletoe, said, Oh, ho, ho, Saint Nicholas. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. It's a joke. If you are a French patron, it's a total joke. It's, I don't know if I should cut that out. Oh, okay. It's a joke. My grandfather was French. We always used to make fun of him. He had a thick French accent till the day he died. And, you know, we would always tease him. Like, that was my... Whatever. You don't need to know this shit. I don't know. I'm just trying to excuse myself away for this horrible shit. And Pierre, when he saw the holly berries and the mistletoe, said... Saint Nicholas will soon be here, for the trees are dressed and ready for his coming. No, that's way too French. He doesn't sound like that. He sounds like Canadian, eh? Saint Nicholas will soon be here, for the trees are dressed and ready for his coming. And if you're from Canada, I also apologize. I know that's not what you sound like. Stereotypes are funny. And Estelle said, Yes, Saint Nicholas will soon be here. And they were both very glad, thinking of his coming. Oh, St. Nicholas, coming 2019. As they went along in the afternoon, they came upon an old man sitting at the door of a small house of spruce boughs under the trees close to the forest path. He was busy making whistles, whittling willow wands with a knife and tapping gently on the bark until the bark loosened from the wood and slipped easily off. The children stood and watched him at his strange work, for he had merry twinkling eyes and a kindly weather-beaten face and thick white hair, and they were not afraid. Hey, that's exactly how people describe me. Oh my God.
Hello,
said the old man. I forgot what... Oh,
hello, said Pierre. Why are you making willow whistles? I'm making them for St. Nicholas,
said the old man.
He is coming soon for his yearly visit. Indeed, he is already in the land.
He kind of sounds like an old witch lady, but it's a man. It's a man. He just high voice issues.
When he makes his rounds, he always gives whistles, among other things, to good children. And I must have a great store of them ready for him when he comes, for there are many children to supply.
I'm really not going to make a reference to supplying children when he comes. There is no joke to be made there. Then he went on whittling busily with his knife. The children watched him for a long time in silence, and they thought what a fine thing it must be to work like the old man for St. Nicholas in his little house of boughs under the boughs, under the forest trees. Then the old man said,
You're very small, children. What are you seeking so far away from people?
I mean, you've met people, right? Come on, it's pretty obvious. And Estelle answered,
Our old grandmother is very sick, and we are looking for meat to make broth to make her well.
Liar, you're doing it for yourself, don't lie, Estelle. The old man was sorry he had no meat, for he lived on other food. He told them that some distance farther along there was a butcher who always kept meat. But the butcher, he said, was a very wicked fellow, and sometimes little children who entered his shop never came out again. Did this guy literally just recommend them to, like, Sweeney Todd? What the fuck is that? Be like, hey, I need some meat. My mom's really sick. She's gonna die without it. It's just like, oh, shit. Okay, I'm a vegan, but right up the way, there's this guy who says he kills and sells cows, but it's actually probably, like, little kids. But, I mean, I'm vegan, so to me, like, a cow, like, that cow is somebody's baby. So really, it's kind of the same thing. So you sick fucking murderous meat eater, you go over there and just go fuck yourself. Okay, also a joke, stereotype. There are vegans that I know and love and you're all wonderful and awesome. Yes. Oh, God, okay, am I covering my ass enough? I don't know. I'm not used to having to control myself. Okay. Where is it? Oh, yeah. Cannibal. He was like, hey, go to that great butcher up there. Yeah. He also kills children. Don't recommend somebody and then immediately warn me away. It's like saying, hey, do you know a good hairdresser? And they're like, oh, yeah, there's this woman up on 4th Avenue. Yeah, that's the only one I really know of around here. But also, I've heard that some of her people come in and their clients come in to go with their haircut. And literally, they're dead the next day. It's so weird. And they find them in the dumpster out back in the shop. But they're pretty sure that hairstylist has nothing to do with it. Anyway, like, big warning. She's probably killing them. But that's, like, really, that's the one I'd recommend. The fuck is that? It's like the worst advice. I double explained that. Nobody needed that second explanation. But I guess I did. I don't think we're gonna get through more than this story. I don't know. This is really long. The way I'm making it is really long. These double explanations. Okay, so he eats kids. But the old man thought for a long time in silence as he whittled his willow wands, and then he said,
I will give you each a whistle, and when you blow it, Saint Nicholas will always hear it. You must never blow it except when you are in great trouble or distress. And when St. Nicholas hears it, he'll know that you're coming to grief or that harm is already upon you.
Oh my God, this is a long sentence.
And he will come himself.
I am such a child.
Or send someone to your assistance. But you must blow only one blast. The whistle should be given only by St. Nicholas himself.
I don't know what his voice has become, and it's hurting. It's hurting me to say it like this. What is he saying?
The whistle should be given only by St. Nicholas himself when he comes at Holidham into the land. But you are good, children, and your old grandmother is sick, and you are trying to make her well, and I know that St. Nicholas will not say that I have done wrong.
So he gave the children each a whistle. Thank God I can talk normally again. And then fear left them, for they knew they could now come to no harm if they had the aid of St. Nicholas. Is this not like a rape whistle that magically summons Santa Claus? That's kind of... so fucking badass. I don't know what he could do, but he's got some weird magical powers, right? Fuck, that's cool. Oh, but could you use it to summon Santa Claus and then kill him and then you can become the Santa Claus? Right? That would be very dangerous in the wrong hands. Okay. It was growing late in the afternoon and the children set out on their way to find the wicked butcher. Maybe they want to die. Maybe that's just, it's like they're coming there to beg, please kill us, eat us, make our lives have some use. But they had many misgivings, and as they went on, they grew faint of heart, for they wondered if the old man had told them the truth about the whistles, or if he was in reality a secret agent of the wicked butcher trying to lure them to their death. They resolved to search for meat elsewhere and to keep away from the butcher's shop. I just let Grandma die. Fuck that manipulative old hag. All right, for a long time they searched, but without success. There was no meat to be had in all the land at any of the places they stopped to ask. Soon they came in sight
of the butcher's shop.
They were very frightened. This is a weird Christmas story. But the sun had already gone down behind the trees, and night was coming on, and they still had no meat. And they knew that if their old grandmother was to get well, she must have meat to make broth.
She must.
I'm sorry, I'm just really feeling sympathetic for her. A shop, too, looked very pleasant and attractive in the cold winter evening. Warm light was shining from a fire through the door, and in the windows were sausages and fat birds and big yellow pumpkins and cakes with red berries on top and roasted children. The children were hungry and wished for something to eat by the warm shop fire. They decided to enter the shop, notwithstanding their fear, because children are stupid. I mean, to buy some food and to get meat for their grandmother's broth as quickly as they could. But before they entered the shop, they thought it would be well, in order to be safe, to blow a blast on their whistle as the old man had told them, so that St. Nicholas would know that they were in dread of harm. They stood for a time in the shadow of the great trees before the door and made ready to blow together. I've seen videos like that. They weren't Christmas-related, but I have seen some people blowing together. Pierre gave the signal and blew a long, soft blast, but Estelle could not get her whistle from her pocket, and Pierre had finished his blast all out of breath before she was ready to blow.
"Don't blow now," he said. "You're just like a girl. Always too late, you fucking misogynistic piece of shit." But blow she would, as the old man had told her.
I saw that video too. And before Pierre could stop her, she blew a long, soft blast on her whistle. Pierre was very cross because he's a fucking dick and he thinks he controls her just because she has a vagina. Pierre was very cross, but he thought that now no good could come of it, as two blasts had sounded, but with his sister he entered the butcher's shop. The wicked butcher was in his shop, but not another person was about the place. It was all very quiet. The man was very glad to see the children, and he seated them by the warm fire and gave them food, and although he shut the door tight behind them, their fear soon vanished, because kids are fucking stupid. After they had eaten well and were warm again, they asked for meat to make... Oh, shit! My fucking microphone attacked me on Christmas. Oh, how could you? I think I might have hit the stand, but fuck me, man. That was not expected. Ooh, plot twist. Okay, where was I? God damn it. I'm afraid this thing is going to tip over on me now. Fucking asshole. Okay. Where was I? After they had eaten well and warm again, they asked for meat to make broth for their old grandmother, and the butcher said he would give them plenty of good meat, though it was very scarce in all the land. There was a barrel standing in one corner. In another corner was a large hogshead reaching almost to the ceiling, and the butcher said that both of these were full of meat. Now the butcher was really the friend and partner of a wicked giant who lived in the forest. These are the frickin' Christmas stories more people need to tell. The giant's greatest delight was to eat little children. He liked no meal so well as a meal of little children, two at a time, pickled first in brine. Could you imagine, like, family being like, come on, kids, gather on the tree, we're going to read Christmas stories. And they're like, read the one about the giant that pickles children. Like, yay, mom and dad. I would like to see that. I would like to see that happening. He liked no meal. Oh, yeah, he eats brined children. He ate them always when he could get them, but he was not always successful in his search, for children were scarce in the land because you keep eating them. He was a great hunter, and he was able to kill many animals in the forest and to secure much meat. So great was his strength, and once a week, regularly, he brought a great load of meat to the butcher and traded it for any little children the butcher managed to entice into his shop. So the butcher got much meat at little cost. And the old man of the House of Boughs was right when he said that many little children who entered the shop never came out again. The butcher was very glad when he saw the two pretty little children. He was expecting the giant that evening on his weekly visit, and he thought gleefully of the great load of meat he would get from the giant in exchange for the children, for he would ask a big price, and he knew the giant would give all the meat he had for so good a meal. And he thought, too, of all the money he would get for the giant's load of meat. So he resolved to kill the children and pickle them in brine to await the giant's coming. Can you really pickle a child that quickly? I mean, I'd feel like people would be difficult to pickle in the time between it took to kill them and the giant's arrival that evening. Unless he's got like a rapid pickler, which I don't know if he does or not, because I am not in this universe. But I would like to think that he is some kind of like flash frying, but like for pickling, flash pickling, you know? Could totally be a thing. Thing of the future. People are going to really want to make pickles. Pickled everything. Pickled children. When the children had finished their meal and had warmed themselves by the fire, they made ready to go home and they asked for their meat. The butcher said he would get it for them. They looked up at the shelves, laden with more food than they had ever seen before. Hams and cabbages and strings of onions. And the little children said, "There are good onions up there. We will buy some and take them home to our grandmother to put in her broth." The butcher said, "There are many kinds of onions in the box on the high shelf. I didn't give him a voice. It's too late. You must pick out the kind you want. I will lift you up to the shelf so that you can see for yourselves." So he caught them each by the coat between the shoulders, and because of his great strength, he lifted them high until they could look into the box and pick out the onions they wanted. And as he took them down, he thrust them straight out from his body at arm's length and held them there, and they laughed because of his great strength. And then he brought them together with terrible force so that their heads struck against the other, and they were stunned by the cruel blow. This is reading like some Three Stooges, right? When Moe's picking up Larry and Curly and like bashing their heads together. Fuck. What is this shit? Then he threw them headfirst to the barrel in the corner, which was filled with brine, not with meat, as he had said, and he left them there to pickle well. He was greatly pleased with the fine load of meat he would get in exchange from the giant, who, he knew, would appear before many minutes had passed. Soon the giant arrived. He carried on his back a great load of meat, and he also drew a sled heavily laden and with many killed carcasses of animals. He carried on his back a great load of meat, and he also drew a sled heavily laden with many dressed carcasses of animals he had killed.
"What cheer for me tonight, and what fortune?"
he said to the butcher as he entered the warm shop with his load. And the butcher said, "Good cheer and fine fortune. I have a good fat pair for you tonight already, pickling in the brine." Then he uncovered the barrel in the corner and showed the giant the two little children sticking headfirst in the pickle. The pickling solution? Okay, in the pickle. The giant smacked his fat lips and chuckled and rubbed his great hands. So pleased was he with the sight of so good a meal. And he said,
"We will let them sleep well in the brine until tomorrow. I always like them very salty."
I don't know why people are talking like this. They covered up the barrel and then they bargained about the purchase of the meat. The giant agreed to give the butcher all of his meat in exchange for the children. Then they sat by the fire drinking and eating until far on into the night. And the giant said that before they went to bed, he would take another look at the children to see how they were pickling. So they went and uncovered the barrel. I think it's finally going to get Christmassy. Now it chanced that St. Nicholas was in the land at the time, as the old man of the House of Boughs had said. He had come into the land to bring his yearly gifts to little children. In the evening, he was many miles away from the butcher shop, but he heard the long, soft blast of a whistle borne on the still evening wind. He knew it to be one of his own whistles, and it told him that little children were in danger. But it was followed by another soft blast, the late blast of Estelle's whistle, and the two blasts meant that the danger was not yet very near to the children, that indeed it was far off, so he thought that there was no need to hurry to the children's aid. Moreover, St. Nicholas was just then leaving tiny dolls for little babies in many little houses in the forest, and he decided to take his time and finish the giving of all these gifts before he set out to the place from which the whistle blast had come. At last he was able to go on his way. Well, they're all dead by now. The snow lay deep in the forest, and traveling was hard, but the white winter moon was shining, and the path was bright, and St. Nicholas moved along quickly on his snowshoes. Far on in the night, he reached the butcher's shop from which he knew the children's note of fear had come. As he entered the shop, the giant and the butcher were just taking their last look before going to bed at the children sticking in the barrel of brine. They did not know St. Nicholas, but when they saw him, they quickly placed the cover of the barrel and were very much confused. St. Nicholas was suspicious that they were about some wickedness, and he knew well that in some way or other the barrel was connected with the dreaded harm of which the children's whistle had told him, and he thought that perhaps the children were hidden in it. So he said,
"I have come for meat. I want meat that has been pickled in brine. I should like a piece from that barrel."
But the butcher said, "It isn't good meat. I've better meat in the inner room. I'll get it for you." So the butcher and St. Nicholas entered the inner room and closed the door behind them while the giant sat on the barrel in the corner, trying to hide it with his great fat legs. In the inner room was a barrel filled with brine, but with only a small piece of meat at the bottom. St. Nicholas said he would take that piece. The butcher bent far into the barrel to reach down in search of the meat, but as he did so, St. Nicholas picked him up by the legs and pushed him headfirst into the barrel of brine. He spluttered and kicked, but he stuck fast in the barrel and could not get out. St. Nicholas placed the cover on the barrel with a great weight on top of it, and that was the end of the wicked butcher. So this story has Santa Claus murdering people to protect children, to defend them from cannibals. Why has this not been made into a story, like a movie already? Can you imagine? Like, sci-fi could do this shit. I'd watch it. Like a fucking Santa Claus versus the cannibals. Has that not been done? That needs to be done, like, so bad. And then if people look at you, you'd be like, "I'm sorry, this is an old Canadian fairy tale. I'm sorry that you're, like, so against Canada. Is it all the healthcare you don't like? Is it the maple syrup? Is it the accents?" Oh, I got lost. Okay. Oh, yeah. Santa Claus is killing people. Then St. Nicholas returned to the shop where the giant was waiting, still sitting on the barrel. He told the giant that he wanted a piece of meat that lay in the bottom of the large hogshead of pickle in the other corner. Pickling solution. He asked the giant to get it for him, as the hogshead was so high that neither he nor the butcher could reach down into it. The giant bent far into the hogshead and began groping for the meat at the bottom. St. Nicholas took a large bone that lay on the floor, and standing on a box beside the hogshead, he struck the giant a powerful motherfucking blow on the head. The giant was only slightly stunned, but in his surprise he lost his balance and fell head first into the brine. He yelled and kicked for some time, but his huge shoulders stuck fast. St. Nicholas covered the hogshead, leaving the giant sticking fast in the pickle, and that was the end of the giant. So Santa's not technically responsible for this death, but definitely was involved in the death of the giant. So he's now racked up his body count even higher. And think about this. How old is St. Nicholas? And how many of these fucking whistles are out there summoning Santa to execute on your behalf? That's so fucking cool. He didn't really ask too many questions. He was just like, "Oh no, kids are in a barrel. Better kill these motherfuckers. We know what's going on." Damn, Santa, that's a big leap in logic. Then St. Nicholas uncovered the barrel in the corner into which he had seen the butcher and the giant looking when he had first entered the shop. There were the two children standing on their heads in the pickle with their feet sticking out at the top. He caught them by the legs and pulled them out, and by his magic power, he soon brought them back to life. Oh, they were dead. Okay, maybe that's how he knew. Whoa, Santa Claus is like God. He's like resurrecting people. Holy shit. That's impressive. He gave them food and warmed them by the fire, and soon they were none the worse for their hour in the barrel of brine, except for all the PTSD. Holy, yeah. Physically, they're fine. So mentally, they definitely won't be suffering from years of trauma. Okay. Then he gave them meat and brought them back to their grandmother, and they made broth for her and soon made her well, and they were all happy again. And the land was troubled no more by giants, for St. Nicholas never again allowed great harm to come to little children, if they always kept his whistle near them and blew softly upon it when they were in trouble or distress. So you have to know, if you
if you want Santa to protect me, you have to blow him. That's what I'm knowing. Blowing Santa, you get his protection.
Okay, let's see. Should we read? Ooh, let's read. The Night Before Christmas. This is a much more traditional Christmassy. So, Christmassy. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in the hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there. 'Cause there's a cannibal butcher, and there's a giant, and they pickled some children in brine. Please, St. Nicholas, come back and revive our children. The children were nestled, all snug in their brine. They were already dead. He didn't make it in time. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the newly fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Dunder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
He's dramatic. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each tiny hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up in a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. Hey, asshole, no smoking indoors, you jerk. I'm gonna lose my deposit. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head all the way around, baby. Total 360. Soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team give a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Because there's explosions. It's a pretty great ending, I think. Okay, maybe we will read one more. This is a Norwegian fairy tale. The Cat on the Dovrefell. Oh, okay. I'm kind of afraid I'm not going to be able to pronounce some of the words in this, but let's try. Once upon a time, there was a man up in Finnmark who had caught a great white bear, which he was going to take to the king of Denmark. Now, it so fell out that he came to the Dovrefell just about Christmas Eve, and there he turned into a cottage where a man lived, whose name was Halvor, and asked the man if he could get house room there for his bear and himself.
"Heaven help me, if what I say isn't true," said the man. "But we can't give anyone house room just now, for every Christmas Eve such a pack of trolls come down upon us that we are forced to flit, and haven't so much as a house over our own heads, to say nothing of lending one to anyone else."
Huh. Sounds like a really good way to skip out on relatives visiting. Just be like, oh shit, no, but there's like this whole situation with these trolls, and like, I'm not even home, I'm just out of there. I don't even know where I'm going this year, so don't even bother asking. It's a good excuse. I still believe it.
Oh, said the man. If that's all, you can very well lend me your house. My bear can lie under the stove yonder, and I could sleep in the side room.
This guy is calling him out. See, that's also the problem. If you have the relatives that want to go, like, oh, well, we'll just stay. The trolls won't bother us. Oh, he fucking knows this game. Well, he begged so hard that at last he wore the guy down. He got leave to stay there, so the people of the house flitted out, and before they went, everything was got ready for the trolls. The tables were laid, and there was rice porridge and fish boiled in lye, and sausages and all else that was good, just as for any other grand feast. So when everything was ready, down came the trolls. Some were great and some were small. Some had long tails and some had no tails at all. Some, too, had long, long noses, and they ate and drank and tasted everything. Just then one of the little trolls caught sight of the white bear, who lay under the stove, so he took a piece of sausage and stuck it on a fork and went and poked it up against the bear's nose, screaming out, okay, I'm not making this up, screaming out,
Pussy, will you have some sausage?
Definitely watch that video. Then the white bear rose up and growled and hunted the whole pack of them out of the doors, both great and small. Next year, Halvor was out in the wood on the afternoon of Christmas Eve, cutting wood before the holidays, for he thought the trolls would come again. And just as he was hard at work, he heard a voice in the wood calling out, Halvor, Halvor.
Well, said Halvor, here I am.
Have you got your big cat with you still?
Yes, I have, said
Halvor. Why do I sound Canadian still?
Yes, I have, said... Yes, that I have, said Halvor. She's lying at home under the stove, and what's more, she's now got 7 kittens, far bigger and fiercer than she is herself.
Oh, then, we'll never come to see you again, bawled out the troll away in the wood, and he kept his word, for since that time the trolls have never eaten their Christmas brose with Halvor on the Dovrefell. This would probably mean a lot more to me if I was Norwegian. Of course, you guys. It makes total sense now. Total sense. That's why the trolls never eat their Christmas brose with Halvor on the Dovrefell. Oh my god, it's all coming together. Ah, god, so many questions finally answered. Finally. Okay, guys. That is going to be it for this one. Thank you so much for listening. I honestly hope you have, like, the best... I can talk. I'm trying to be heartfelt and I'm fucking this up. Not supposed to be funny anymore, if I ever was. Okay, I hope you guys have a really awesome Christmas, or not Christmas, or had an awesome Christmas, etc., etc., etc. I really appreciate you guys, and you've given me a lot to be grateful for this year, so thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day, and I will talk to you next week. I love you guys. Mwah.